Does the name T.D. Jakes mean anything to you?
Yeah.
Any folks? T.D. Jakes is an African-American preacher who preaches with a preaching towel. And I'm kind of feeling already like I need a preaching towel this morning, so I apologize if I don't have one. Wasn't it amazing how the whole world, it was mentioned in the prayers, how the whole world seemed to unite with a sense of hope? You know, whatever our differences happen to be, and our differences are many, the whole world seemed to unite with a sense of hope for those boys from Thailand in the soccer team, right? That they might be rescued and their coach. And when they were rescued, were you like me? There was this kind of just this sense of good news. The sense of this injection of hope that was desperately needed. You know, the lead diver of the rescue mission captivated me. The lead diver said in an interview, he said, "I've been diving for 30 years. It's my passion. And I've always wondered whether my passion would be used for a greater purpose." And he said, "I feel like the last 2 weeks I've been leading and living my whole life preparing for this moment." Kind of reminds me of Frederick Buechner and his beautiful quote where he said, "The place that God calls you to is the place where your heart's deep gladness meets the world's deep hunger." I got news for you today. God is calling you. Now, you may not be an underwater scuba diver. God may not be calling you to save some boys from a cave, and that's probably a good thing because I swim like a rock. But God's calling you. God is calling you to use your gifts, your passion, to join God's liberating, healing, restoring, saving work in this world. So God's calling you. You know, the real question we need to wrestle with today, are we paying attention? Are we paying attention? So today we're looking at one of my favorite stories in the Bible. It's actually the story that was preached at my ordination, the story of God's call to Moses in the burning bush. I love this story. And before we get to the point that I really want to focus on in the story in chapter 3, I want to give you a little bit of the background. It begins in Egypt with Pharaoh. Now, Pharaoh had been kind of slowly enslaving the Hebrew people. And by this time, there were so many Hebrew slaves that Pharaoh actually feared that they would revolt and kick him out. So what Pharaoh did is he came up with a plan to kill all of the Hebrew baby boys by throwing them in the Nile River for them to die. Well, Moses, remember Moses? Kind of looks like Charlton Heston, a little bit.
Apparently sounds like Charlton Heston too. So Moses was one of those baby boys that was supposed to die. And his mom did the best that she could to hide Moses as long as she possibly could. And then when it became too threatening, she placed Moses in a basket. And she placed the basket in the shallow part of the river in the weeds by the bank of the river. Now this speaks to us contemporarily. This speaks to us today. This right there shows the risk, the desperate risk a mom is willing to take to protect her child because she loves her child. So often we kind of judge, but we're not in those shoes. So Moses' mom, can you imagine how hard that would have been? Places her little baby in a basket in the river. Well, the Pharaoh's daughter happened to be bathing in the same spot. And the Pharaoh's daughter notices the basket, hears the crying baby, she's moved, so she takes the baby Moses as her own. She adopts Moses, and she's the one who actually calls him Moses. Now, if you think that's not complicated enough, it really gets messy now.
Because Moses grows up in the royal household, but he kind of lives between two worlds. He knows, for somehow he knows his ethnic heritage, but he has all of this power and wealth and privilege. But he also knows that he's the child of a Hebrew slave. And he feels this incredible connection to their suffering. So one day, an Egyptian guard was beating mercilessly a Hebrew slave. Moses intervenes. And in intervening in the altercation that took place, Moses ends up killing the Egyptian guard. This is reported, and Pharaoh decides that Moses is a murderer, so he has to flee. And he not only flees, he flees as far away as he possibly can flee to a place called Midian. And Midian is just like it sounds. It's the middle place. Midian is the place between where you've been and you're trying to get away from, and the place where you kind of long and hope to be someday. There you are in Midian. And Moses finds himself in Midian, and he helps out these daughters of a Midian priest by the name of Jethro. Moses helps these daughters water their flocks. And so in compensation, Moses is given a wife. I'll just leave that little detail right there, and we'll preach on that on another day, on another Sunday. But Moses now is married, and he works for his father-in-law, Jethro, he's a shepherd, tending the flocks. So here we are, Moses is in Midian, the middle place, as a shepherd, keeping the flock. The Hebrew people, the Hebrew slaves are still in Egypt, they're suffering, they're crying out to God for deliverance. And that's where we find ourselves in chapter 3, verses 1 to 14, that Stephanie's going to read for us.
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on the account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to a good land and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So I come. I will send you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" He said, "I will be with you, and this shall be a sign for you that it is I who sent you. For when you have been brought out of the people, when you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God on this mountain." But Moses said to God, "If I come to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' and they ask, 'What is his name?' what shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." He said further, "Thus you shall say to the Israelites, 'I am has sent me to you.'"
You don't have any plans today, do you? I could preach on these 14 verses for the next 3 months. Ready? No, I'm just kidding. So, where does it begin? It begins in Midian, right? And Moses is keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro. Keeping. Nothing flashy, nothing fancy, everyday, ordinary life. Moses is just tending to what's in front of him, the demands that kind of come across him every single day. I'm guessing he no longer hears that call to be part of something greater. He's keeping. That's where this extraordinary story takes place, in the everyday, keeping. I want you to notice the verb in verse 1. The verb in verse 1 says, Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro. Keeping. Now that's a maintenance verb, right? Keeping. We keep things steady. We keep and maintain the status quo. You know, it's like getting up in the morning and eating breakfast and keeping your schedule. You know, keeping your house clean. Keeping your appointments. Keeping track of the kids. Keeping on top of social media. Keeping a budget. Keeping your head above water. Keeping fear at bay. Keeping anxiety. Keeping depression at bay. Keeping. We just keep keeping on. Because that's what we do. We keep keeping on. So that's where it begins. It says that Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro. But then the verb changes. And when the verb changes, the place changes, and all of a sudden they're not in Midian anymore. Midian, that middle place where we keep things going. And now notice it changes. I want you to notice two shifts in this next verse. This is still verse 1, by the way. I told you, a month. Still verse 1. It says, Moses led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. Two shifts. The verb changes. It's no longer keeping. He's no longer keeping. He's no longer kind of keeping the status quo. It's no longer business as usual. He's leading the flock beyond the wilderness. That's what shepherds do. They lead their flock, right? They lead their flock where the flock needs to go. Still water, green pastures, paths of righteousness, happy places where happy flocks go. But that's not where Moses takes them. It says he led the flock beyond the wilderness. Beyond the wilderness. One translation actually has it. He led the flock to the backside of the desert. Well, who'd want to go there? A remote place, a desolate place, a place that's really, really hard to reach. So this says that Moses led the flock not just to the wilderness, but beyond the wilderness. So whatever wilderness means to you, another step beyond that. Isn't it interesting, though? Because it says that Moses led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. The ancient people say that's where God speaks. So isn't it interesting that Moses had to leave where he normally took the flock, kept the flock, the places they normally went. He had to leave what was familiar and comfortable and safe. He had to step away from keeping. And that's when he came to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. Now I wondered to myself, you know, didn't Moses plan this? Did Moses get up in the morning and say, the mountain of God, today, that's it. Enough of Midian, I'm leaving. I have a friend who actually, his 70th birthday, he decided, Mount Kilimanjaro, I'm climbing it. So he actually booked a trekking company and a plane ticket that morning. So does Moses decide, you know, enough of Midian, I want to go to the mountain of God. I get that. Midian is exhausting. We all, I think, yearn for something more. Or was it just a glorious accident? You know, was he just looking for a stream that had some water because his flock was thirsty? I don't know. But there he was, face to face with the mountain of God. And what we do know is the text is really clear. It starts in Midian. It starts in the safe place, the known place, the familiar place, the middle place. But then he goes beyond the wilderness. He's willing to leave keeping. And it's then, it says, that he sees Mount Horeb, the mountain of God, and a bush that is burning. So, you know, maybe this bush was burning for a long, long, long time, just waiting for Moses to come. Maybe you have a burning bush, just waiting. Will they ever leave Midian? So let's go to verse 2. You might be thinking, verse 2, oh my gosh. I'm only going to do 3 verses. Relax. So verse 2, do you have verse 2 up there? Because I totally forgot what it says. You don't have verse 2? Well, I think it says something like, the angel of the Lord appeared to Moses in the midst of a flame of fire in a bush. So there we are. Am I close to that? Mm-hmm. Do you notice why in the world? So the angel of the Lord appeared to Moses in the middle of a flame, in the middle of a bush. Why in God's name doesn't the angel of the Lord appear in Midian when I'm lying on my couch watching Netflix or a baseball game? That doesn't seem to happen much. The angel of the Lord seems to happen when I get off the couch, when I leave, just keeping on, keeping on. That's, it seems, when I notice the angel of the Lord, and the angel of the Lord speaks. So what's interesting about this is Moses said he saw Mount Horeb, the mountain of God, and there was a bush that was burning that was not consumed. And it says that Moses was curious about this. He turned aside. Whoa, I want to know more about this. Curiosity, that's the key, isn't it? So often we think we know all there is to know. So often we think we already know the answers. So we stay in Midian. And we're not curious about what might be beyond Midian. We're not curious about what we don't know, what we don't yet understand. So what's really interesting, I'm really curious, do you have a burning bush? Do you have something that's seared into your soul that keeps burning? And you might try to kind of distract yourself, keeping on in Midian. But there it is. You find those quiet moments, maybe those desolate places, and there it is, calling to you. Do you have a burning bush? Does that make sense? Lori and I were in Thailand several years ago. We were in Nong Khai on the Laotian border, and we were visiting orphanages. Spent a couple days there. There was a little boy about 8 years old. I played soccer 2 whole days with this little boy. Loved him. God, he was a great kid. He kind of crawled into my heart. And we were leaving after a couple days. And we were saying goodbye. This little boy was sitting on the steps of the orphanage. And as we were walking away, there was one tear silently rolling down his cheek. He thought we had come to take him home.
his face with that tear rolling down his cheek is seared into my soul and burns. Yeah, I distract myself. I keep on keeping on in Midian, maintaining what's in front of me. And then I'm awakened. I'm awakened by stories of boys trapped in a cave. I'm awakened by stories of children, babies, still not reunited with their families. I'm awakened of the picture of children living in tents in refugee camps. I'm awakened by kids who need foster parents, by kids who are bullied. And it's like that image of that little boy in Thailand, that tear rolling down his cheek, just burns and calls to me. And calls to me to use my passions, to use my gifts, to remind everyone that they belong. To use my passion and my gifts to remind everyone that they are loved with a love from which they can never be separated, that their lives matter. That's my burning bush. What's yours? What's your burning bush that consumes and sears and calls you to a life larger than yourself? The last image I want to leave you is the last verse, is verse 3. And this verse says, Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up. There's your spiritual journey in a sentence. That's our spiritual life. That's our invitation. That's the invitation into deeper engagement. Turn aside. Look. Ask why. You know, Moses knew that this wasn't one of those sceneries where you could whiz by at 70 miles an hour in the car. Look, kids. He had to stop. He had to park the car. He had to get out. He had to turn aside. He had to look. He had to look harder. He had to look closer. He had to crouch down. He had to climb up. He had to get closer. He had to get close enough that you're uncomfortable how close you are. He had to put down his iPhone. He had to turn aside from all that distracts. He had to turn aside from Midian. And then he had to ask that question. The question that Pharaoh does not want you to ask. Why? Why is this bush burning, but it is not consumed? Why are there 65 million people displaced refugees in the world right now? Why are kids not yet reunited with their families? Why is there a disproportionate number of people of color incarcerated in our prison systems? Why are there still people without food to eat and a roof over their heads when we live in such affluence? Why are we the most medicated country in the world, and yet the rates of depression continue to skyrocket? Why is suicide at an all-time high? Why are we still arguing the science of climate change when the earth is burning? Why are there so many elderly people lonely? Why? Why is there so much suffering when people, like the Egyptians, are crying out to God for deliverance, and yet the pews of the church become emptier and emptier and emptier? Why? So Scripture says, Moses turned aside. He looked. He asked why. And then he was told, this is holy ground. You are on holy ground. He was then ready to be addressed by God. He was then ready to be called by God. He was then ready to listen to God's call in his life to participate with God in setting God's people free. Started in Midian. Moses was keeping the flock. The verb changed. The location changed. There was a willingness to go beyond the wilderness. And what do you know? That's the pathway to Mount Horeb, where there's a burning bush with your name on it. You know, I love this church. I love this community. I love you. You know that Midian is not our home. You know that our work is not keeping, our work is not maintaining. You're willing to be led beyond the wilderness. It's a scary place sometimes. But that's where we hear God's call. God's call to us to use our gifts, our passions, to set God's people free from all that binds them. Nelson Mandela said, there is no passion in playing small, in settling for a life in Midian that is less than the one that you are capable of living. So my friends, I gotta bet that there's a burning bush with your name on it. Turn aside, look, listen, respond. May it be so. We continue to worship God as the morning offering is received.